This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 311 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So in this episode, we are going to share our interview with an author, right, Sam?
I mean, yeah.
And you may have heard of her before. We were able to interview her for her book called Hag, and her most recent book, which is due out
today.
Today! Yay! Congratulations for the book birthday for
Miss Kathleen Kaufman.
But what's the book's called?
Oh, I mean, here's the thing.
Devil.
Is it though?
Deval?
It's called D-I-A-B-H-A-L. That's what it's called. And if you stay tuned and listen to the rest of this interview, you'll understand. Because I can try to pronounce it all day long, but at the end of the day, she
on the back of the book, it says devil. And so I'm just going to go with that, even though we are no Gaelic experts. So we were happy to have Kathleen back. And yeah, she seems to have a talent. She has a spooky bent, would you say?
Absolutely. She clearly has a bend. Like, she is like, this is her genre is the horror. It is.
Oh, yeah. But almost like a gentle horror. It's not
right.
Like so. That
no,
doesn't freak me out. No, I can do it.
It is cerebral horror, which is infinitely worse, in my opinion. But that being said, if you are in the Colorado area around Thanksgiving, there may or may not be a super cool thing for you to go look at and participate in.
And she, yes. And so we'll have all the information about Kathleen's events for her book. And she'll talk about them in the interview as well. But we'll have all those links in the show notes. And yeah, there's a chance to meet her in, I think, Los Angeles or in the LA area, as well as in Colorado.
And Denver.
Yes. Okay, so without further ado,
Ms. Kathleen Kaufman.
Your book premieres. It is a premiere, kind of. It's officially published on the 29th, right?
Yes, yes. And I like premiere. It makes it sound so fancy.
Premiere. Hey, yes. I mean, I'll wear a dress and everything.
I'll put down a red carpet in my house.
Right? Oh my God. If writers everywhere started doing that, like, I just have this red carpet. It could just be like a welcome mat, but this red carpet in front of my house, I hung like a curtain or a step and repeat.
She's going to have
heels.
I was going to say, she's going to have a step and repeat.
Come do your hair and your makeup.
My God, it'd be awesome. Of course, we can't afford like real red carpet because we're all broke.
Oh,
so
I know.
It'll have to be like.
Spray your grass.
Right?
I don't know.
Let's have to spill a bunch of like $2 Chuck on it and pretend like it was red.
I was going to say, I'm like, you've got a kid. Just, you know, get a white carpet and
go to town.
Have that.
Oh my gosh. Go to Home Depot or I don't know where. I don't know where else to go. And ask for their remnants, whatever is closest to red.
Yeah.
And you know what? If it's hot yellow or neon pink, say, this is my carpet, bitch. This is what it's going to be.
Right.
Well, you know, so many of the award shows now are like the pink carpet at the such and such or the purple carpet. Yeah. So you could pick whatever you wanted. You know, that's a book premiere carpet. So
I like
it could be, you know, brown.
This is my patchwork piece together carpet.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, I love
you know,
it.
Actually, no, okay. You could do that. You could do whatever is in your budget or something that you like. But oh my gosh, if it were like themed for the book.
Ooh. That'd be pretty.
Like for you, actually, you have it. You just need to go into whatever themed Halloween store and do it.
Oh man.
Pretty much all of your books could be in a Halloween store. You've got like the perfect you're like my jam.
Oh, man, that's so nice.
I don't think that a book cover has set the tone for a book quite like the book cover you have selected for Devil I can't think of a better physical representation of what this book becomes. Because as I started this book, I honestly don't think that the cover really gave it justice. Because I don't think that I knew what I was really getting myself into. So I think that just the picture alone, if you just ignore the back, I think there's just enough of that macabre something bad's going to happen. Don't let her open the door kind of.
Well, you have my publisher to thank entirely for that. That was entirely their brainchild. It was their artist. It was everything. So, it turned out really gorgeous. So I'm really very, very happy with it.
So now that we've been chatting for 3 minutes and 2 seconds, who are we and who are you and what are we doing? Okay.
Oh my goodness.
So I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer.
And we're the Outletter Podcast. And we're so happy to have author Kathleen Kaufman back with us.
Yay.
She was first here to chat with us about her book, her novel, Hag, which of course had a very Scottish and Scottish legend storyline in it. And we met her, in case you haven't listened to that. If you haven't, why not? Go find it and go get her books. We went to Comic-Con, as we do for almost every year, last year, 2018. And we were there following, it was kind of like the year of Deb, or this year, whatever. A lot of years have been the years of Deb recently.
Right.
And we were trying to go, she's been there as an author, but it was the first time Sky and Bad Wolf and all of them for the production team and the channel, etc., that the production of A Discovery of Witches was making their Comic-Con debut. And so we were going to be there and Deb was there. So we were going to be there and go to, as even if we had to split up, which we did sometimes, we were going to make sure we attended anything and everything possibly that Deb was in or involved with. And one of those panels was this, I forget the name, but the theme between all of the artists, between all of the authors, was that they had written a book that had been adapted for TV or film, or was in the process of being done that way. Mm-hmm. And you were on that panel.
I know. It was like the pinnacle of my whole career, I think, that day. Comic-Con. It was amazing.
It was so much fun.
But I'm still curious. How is the production of... I'm sorry, Lard Balor going.
Really, really good.
I know it's Laird Balor.
I was like, wait, Lard? I forgot about this joke. What's going on?
That guy's pronunciation made me get me. I was
oh my
dying.
Gosh.
It was so
no,
funny.
You know how many people pronounce it like that, though? It's kind of hilarious. So, and it's sort of my fault. I mean, I keep giving these titles with like ridiculous pronunciations, and that's what you get. You
well,
know?
Hag was brilliant. Nobody
Hag
missed
is, yeah, nobody
Hag.
Messed it up.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's you know, I did this really, but no, it's going really, really well. And it is full steam ahead. In fact, I have talked to the director, Nick Verso, very recently, and it is moving. You know, Hollywood time is funny because they're like, it's going so fast in like a year's past, you know, and they're like, it's Mach speed. And it's like, you know, 2 years later, you know, so it's like so. It's Hollywood time. So yeah, in Hollywood years, it's like dog years. In Hollywood years, it's like going at a pretty good clip. But so funny enough, it sounds like it's going to be a foreign film because it's going through Screen Australia, which is amazing. Awesome. It's going to be so much fun. And
you don't know. I don't know. You may know. I don't know. I'm guessing that some Kathleen we know might be flown out to Australia.
I would love that. And right? I'm really excited because it's not only is it Australia, but they have gigantic spiders there. I've seen the videos.
Oh, did you, right? did you share that picture on Facebook? And I know you had the whole possum gate thing, but someone shared something where it was, I'm not joking. It was a possum, mm-hmm. a possum hanging in a spider web.
Yep.
Oh, well, my God.
It's the danger of kitty doors. Yeah. Well, I mean, but the thing that you have to consider is that if they do film this in Australia, you're going to have to get used to it being called the Laird Balor.
Exactly. And I'm okay with that.
I think she's okay with that.
I'm good. So, yeah, no.
Laird Balor, take full summer.
You're really scared there. No, I mean, it's going to be fantastic. But in Hollywood time, it's actually going pretty fast. It's just in real human time, it feels really, really slow. So, you know.
So is there, and I'm not asking for details because even if you did know them, my guess is you'd have to say, or you'd have to either say no comment or just smile. are you kept abreast of any casting information or is it just not that far yet?
It's just not that far yet,
Got
to
it.
My knowledge,
okay.
right?
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you are boxing yourself in with making difficulty things for your productions when you write so many novels with the protagonists being young people?
Well,
like very young.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting question because they're young people, like, but they're
no
not
sex
really
scenes with this one.
Right?
Well, but they're young people, but they're not mentally
correct.
Young,
yeah,
which is
true.
it's a very specific mm-hmm. kind of thing. So it's not like you're just, oh, we just need some 6-year-olds to run around. It's like, no, I need 6-year-olds who can play evil and powerful and all of these other things while still becoming the protagonist that everyone wants to root for. So, I mean, there's just, it's a lot. And when I was reading Devil, I was like, wow, if this one ever got optioned, this would be really, really hard to cast.
Oh, yeah. But there's a lot of really good creepy kid actors out there. So I'm hopeful. Really, really hopeful. And I think kids are the creepiest things ever. So, and I have one, you know, so I mean, I can.
You ever heard them singing alone in their rooms at night? It's the creepiest ever.
Oh, I tell you. No, but I do think that the idea of how much we underestimate kids and how much they're truly capable of and how much intellectually but also spiritually how much they're really capable of is fascinating to me. And I think that they get boxed into such, like, you know, a lot of young adult books kind of have them just kind of wedged into cute little kid boxes. And I guess I kind of like to play with that, although I should maybe one day write a book about a grown-up at some point. Maybe. We'll see.
You write lots of grown-ups. They're just periphery.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So, you can write a grown-up. I've read several grown-ups that you've written.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So Summer asked you about your talent, yes, but your preference, it seems, for young protagonists. Do you have a specific either experience or something or someone you've met or something you've read as far as your inspiration for your lead in Devil, meaning Kate?
You know, it's interesting with Kate because I started writing it and I don't know if I meant for her to be, I don't know if I meant for her to be quite as young as she was, but I really wanted this to be a story about the wickedness that exists in humans, you know, like it's not so much about a devil, like the devil's the least of our problems, really. It's like the evil that we can commit towards each other is the scariest thing. And in this case, the idea of McLaren Hall and the idea of the foster care system in LA in general, but as it existed in the 80s, especially, to me is one of the most horrific and shameful things about LA history is places like McLaren Hall and the group home system that existed then and now for that matter. But as I started formulating the story in my head, I realized that, no, this is who I want to mm-hmm. go through this. 'Cause how better to kind of showcase that concept, right? It could be an adult, but an adult is, you know, they have agency. They can make their own decisions. They could leave if they wanted to. A kid, even if you are the reincarnation of the, you know, God of the dead, is really subject to the whims and wills of the adults around them. Their choice and their ability to have freedom within their own lives is severely limited and directly at the whims of the natures of the people controlling them.
That's universal for like the whole book. Like it's not like, oh, well, when she's in this one place, she is limited by the people around her. It's like, that's the reality of a 10-year-old.
Right.
You're limited by those limitations everywhere mm-hmm. you go. And I bet that's gotta be something that's kind of an interesting thing to write because you have to write somebody who's smart enough to function within those things but still get what they need and what they want out of it. So that had to be a much more interesting thing to write than just your general protagonist who can get anywhere they need to.
Right.
Just because they're adults.
Well, and I think it was also interesting with Kate because she's a kid and she is going through that 10 to 13-year-old stage of development for girls and boys, but maybe especially girls, is wicked. I mean, it's you're starting to be aware of what you're capable of. You're starting to be aware of your own choices and preferences, and you have zero control in your life. And I think you're going through puberty, you're going through all these things, and they're a pain in the butt, you know, 12-year-old girls. Because, you know, so she's not always pleasant. And I think I had to go back and make her more pleasant in drafts, because she was being a real teenager at points, a real like preteen. Because I didn't want her to lose that thing, because she may be all these things too. Maybe she is, you know, the head of her cult. She is the head of, you know, she's a reincarnated demon, but she is also a kid who's going through growing up in a situation that is developmentally hard anyway, but made tenfold by the fact that she's in a situation that is confining and abusive and constricting.
One of the ways I think I felt that you showed her being a kid, right? One of the things that showed her true humanity as a fellow 80s child. Holy Kasmakas, you had, I like, if I had a dollar for, and I'm being a little facetious, yes, but if I had a jar and a dollar for every time there was something in there that I was like could have jumped up and done score for every single thing that I either recognized, not just recognized like, oh, that was around, but something that I did or read or was involved. And I was like, this is ridiculous.
No, she distilled our childhood down to the two things, the two most memorable things, which are V.C. Andrews books and Days of Our Lives. Those two things were so prominent in my 80s experience.
No, well, you know, because I lived in my V.C. Andrews books. Like, I lived there. I lived in the book, in all of them, but Heaven especially, I was Heaven. I lived in the Ozark Mountains.
To be fair, Heaven was the best. That's the best of all of them. I did the Dawn series. It was okay. Flowers in the Attic, that was just creepy from beginning to end. There was never any light in Flowers in the Attic ever. It was always dark. Whereas Heaven was much more of a roller coaster. And I won't say it felt more realistic because there's still brother-sister nastiness happening, because it's not V.C. Andrews if there's not some incest.
Good Lord, no.
But right. No, it's just not the same. They're so formulaic that if you've read one, you read them all. But this one, that particular series, Heaven, I think that one was hands down between my sister and I, the one that we reread the most.
Yep. I had a thing for Troy. My favorite was book number two, Dark Angel. And I cried when we thought he died. When he was getting it on with his niece. Oh my gosh.
Yep.
So sidebar, did you watch I think it was on Lifetime. Lifetime did all of the Heaven books.
Yes, what?
They did all of
them.
Why
am I just now hearing about this?
Because they're not that popular.
I'm just telling you. They did all of them back to back with all the same actors.
Oh my gosh.
So, and they released them all on, it was one Saturday, then the next Saturday, then the next Saturday, then the next Saturday. You can go find them. I set up the DVR to record them, and then I don't have cable. I have it at my boyfriend's house. So I had them at his house. He's like, what is all this Heaven crap? And I was like, don't worry about it. I will delete them when I'm done.
Don't worry about it.
And he's
it's not for you.
I'm like, this is not for you. This is not the show you're looking for. and I made my daughter suffer through it with me. She's like, Mom, this is terrible. I'm like, of course it is. It's terribly awesome. Be quiet.
My goodness.
But no, please go find it and watch them all. They're terribly awful, but they are definitely worth watching for your inner 80s.
I can only imagine how awful it really is, because I mean, let's face it, all of the Flowers in the Attic movies have been terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Oh God, yeah. And it's the same people. Like, it's the exact same production house that did the Flowers in the Attic movies on that for TV. And it's pretty terrible. But what I have found for myself is that when I go back and watch them now or read them, if I was reading them again, is that as an adult, they're even worse. Like as much as I enjoyed them as a child, going back and reading them now, I'm like, this is so gross. Yep. This is really wrong. And you just get something completely different out of them as adults than you did as kids. So I don't know that any adults really read V.C. Andrews. I think it was all 11, 12, and 13-year-olds in the 80s.
Oh, I think so. Because I reread Heaven when I was writing this book. And I actually had to order another copy of it because mine you know, I came home. So I had like every book that she'd ever written. And then I went to college and I came back and they were gone. Like they were just gone. Ugh. And I know my mom was finally like, okay, sweet. I'm getting rid of this crap, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I was crushed, really.
Or did she take them and they live in her room?
Right.
Now? And she'll never let you have them back.
I remember asking her, being like, what happened to them? She's like, what are you talking about? They never mm-hmm. existed. What they books? Never existed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but it is creepy.
Can I read? It's not.
Yes.
It won't give up. It'll mention the two characters' names, but it doesn't give up any storyline. Okay. It's in chapter 75. Amon stood in front of Kate in acid-washed jeans, a faded Thundercats t-shirt, with the sleeve rolled to the top of his deathly pale biceps. And a blue pinstriped suit vest. On his head sat a pork pie hat in loud yellow plaid. His Converse sneakers were dotted with cartoon ladybugs. Yes, my liege, your personal Beau Brady is reporting for duty, he said sarcastically, a delighted grin hanging on his lips. That...
Did you just Google like 80s clothes
exactly.
and then like type them all
no,
in?
No, and Thundercats and Beau Brady. I mean, everything.
I may have just had to look in my closet or not. Or I did extensive research on the 80s. I mean, I did that second part. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, lest any of you think she's gone straight by naming her main character Kate, it's spelled C-E-I-T.
Oh, yeah.
To confuse every last one of you for the end.
Oh,
of time.
Absolutely, because it would really be a shame if you could pronounce most of the words in my
right?
books. Yeah.
Right.
I'm constantly surprised my publisher lets me keep getting away with this trick of putting in crazy Gaelic language. And in this one has Navajo too, so ha, take that.
I was about to say, okay, you took us there. So
yeah.
Okay, a few questions about that. Why the selection of Navajo? And once you decided to go with it, as you're developing that part or those parts of the story and the and any quotes, you know, language, dialogue, that kind of thing, do you have a consultant? Do you know a Navajo speaker? And who was your proofreader? Like, how did that go down?
So I grew up in the Southwest in Colorado, and I went to college in Durango, which is about, I don't know, not even an hour from the New Mexico border. And Fort Lewis College in Durango is interesting because it's still true today that if you have a certain amount of American Indian blood, then you have free tuition, which is awesome. I don't, but the school had a lot of, it was a really, really interesting, diverse school to go to. And my roommate was from Chinle, where that part of the book takes place. And she grew up on the Navajo reservation. And most of our friends grew up on the Navajo reservation. And as a result, I spent a lot of time. And during the 4 years I was in college in Chinle with her, we'd go down there on the weekends. We'd, you know, this is where we all went. So I'd spent a lot of time there and in and around Canyon de Chelly, which is also another location without giving too much away in the book. But it's absolutely a stunning, stunning area. But I had spent a lot of time there. And as the book developed, that's just sort of where she ended up. So the Navajo is interesting because my roommate spoke it quite a lot. And so did a lot of our friends. And I'd always kind of fallen in love with it because it's technically a dying language in the sense that a lot of younger people on the reservation and in the Navajo Nation don't speak it and don't practice it regularly enough for it to be considered like a living, thriving language. And I think people are working to change that, but it's a fascinating thing to me. But yeah, I had friends who I leaned on for a lot of the translations, and my good friend, the internet, helped me a lot too. But I took all of my Navajo language that I included in the book, and it went through people who spoke it partially. And it's hard. I don't know. Think I know anybody who speaks Navajo completely fluently. So I'm sure if a fluent speaker of Navajo reads the book, they're going to be like, what's she trying to say here? You know, but it is, I was lucky enough to be able to have the language that I used in the book proofed and double checked. But it was, I mean, I don't know if you two got an arc of the book. I think you did, and you don't have the. Mm-hmm. So
I loved the Wingdings.
Yeah, well, it was really kind of funny because it's like the typeface in the arcs couldn't even handle Navajo because it has letters and symbols that don't exist anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So they came out all coded. And I felt
I was wondering, like, oh, this language is very interesting looking.
Yeah.
It's got rectangles with X's through them.
I'm just going to pretend it's pronounced because I can't think this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I felt like I was so disappointed and they just had to change. They had to get a special type font in order to handle the Navajo, which is.
Oh, so now you're being a diva.
I know.
So you're saying this is a collector's edition?
Yes, isn't that hilarious?
I love it.
Yeah. So yeah, I really like, they had to go to really special lengths to make my crazy language choices work.
But that's the sign of, I mean, maybe part diva, but that's the sign of a really respectful and publisher you want to be involved with. You know what I mean? Like they respect, they respect your work and they're not going to come to you and say, sorry, you're the only book we're probably ever going to have that needs this. We're not going to do it's. We're not. It's not a good business decision. You know what I mean? That was a
totally.
That's a kudos, Turner.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And they were nothing but supportive in all of the eclectic. Is that a good word for it? Choices.
Yeah. You have.
So I've noticed in the theme that I've noticed that's threaded through all of the books is Gaelic. Mm-hmm. So I know that your family. Has the Gaelic connection. Do you feel that background and your own personal connection to it kind of drives your, not insistence, that makes it sound like you're being petulant, but your desire to continue.
Diva. Right?
She is.
Jeez.
Does it drive your diva desires to use it?
Where's my mineral water?
Oh my God. Right.
I'm not even in the green room.
Sorry. We'll have the regular carpet out for you.
I found blue M&Ms in the bowl. Okay, I just want you two to know.
Oh, crap.
In my writer, all right?
So do you feel that your personal connection to Gaelic, it has fed your desire to have it be so prevalent in all of your novels?
Yeah, and you know, it has, you know, to be fair to the stories, it has been an integral part of the mythology that I'm lifting it from too. I mean, a lot of the stories about the Caiche and the Hag were in Gaelic, or the references were in Gaelic, and you had to look up, you know, the word Caiche is Gaelic, you know, so there's a lot of things that you had to look up. And if you're even just reading like the core, like the base mythology of it. Now, you know, and then in Kate's case, it wasn't just Gaelic, it was Irish Gaelic, which is actually kind of a different dialect from the Scottish Gaelic. So I had to go in and really be careful about the word choices I was making. And I actually have a friend who lives in Belfast who proofs this stuff for me. And that's, so she, I have language consultants out there that help me out with these crazy things. But she helped me out with this particular part of the book in terms of the Irish Gaelic and as it opposed to the Scottish Gaelic for Davla. So it's interesting because there are so many different dialects of Gaelic, and I think it's making a huge resurgence too. It's another language that's technically deemed as dead, but is making a huge resurgence in the culture and in the UK.
Well, we like to call that the Outlander effect.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
it's definitely driven a resurgence in people wanting to speak it more. I mean, that was practically a dead language with the only people still carrying it slowly dying out themselves. So, but through Outlander, and I won't say Outlander is the only reason, but that's definitely one of the catalysts to people being interested in learning it again. So, and the people who are requesting it and driving a lot of that desire for knowledge are not even the people who are from there. So, I mean, it's, or maybe they're not immediately from there. Because, like, I mean, technically, my family goes back. I could trace members of my family back to those places, but we've been here since, like, the 1700s. Right. So we're here. So any connection that we feel to it is mostly because we want it.
Right.
So it's the desire to be connected to something, because I find that Americans don't really have that connection.
Right. Right. We don't really. And we have this relatively new country. And I think it's sort of American nature to start seeking out our connections to wherever it is our people came from before.
Speaking of connections, I already mentioned him when I read that quote, but does the character of, is it Amon?
I call him Amon, but you can call him Amon. Yeah. He won't be mad.
So is he the Amon, like as in Amon Ra? Is he connected to the Egyptian pantheon?
Well, I have within the book the idea that really this is all the same demon, and that he's, yeah, now that's what the Egyptians, because this doesn't come up in this book. It comes up in the second book that will be out next year. But he talks about how this is, you know, really like, this is what they called me then, and this is what they called me in this place. And yeah, so it is basically the same one, but I have the idea being is that this is, you know, demon, he's the same demon. He's just been in different cultures called different things, you know, but yeah, basically the same guy.
And I loved that because to me, that was just this overarching universal evil. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's, and it doesn't even have to be evil, because I haven't decided if he's evil or not yet. But and I feel the same way about most religions. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the core, a lot of the deities are very similar to one another. Yep. So it, to me, seems very, very plausible that it could just be one demon or a one cluster of demons that travels around and influences all of the different religions, just with different names, because each culture has a different experience. But that at the sum of it all, it's all just the same.
Right. And I think that's absolutely true. I mean, it's kind of like flood stories in religion, right? Oh my goodness. I'm sorry. That's my dog.
Angus?
That's Angus. He wants to be on the podcast.
Baby guy.
Like my cat, every time we record, he's like,
oh, yeah, I know, right?
Mine are flanking me right now. I got one on the left and one on the right. So they,
yep.
I get it.
But yeah, so flood stories, you know, and it's, I think that you have similar demon stories and witch stories that will appear in different cultures too, because you had similar problems that cropped up, you know, you had, and you needed something to blame. And demons are a pretty good scapegoat when you're looking for things to blame. You know, things, stuff that's outside your control on. So I think in most religions, you see some form of Amon, some form of, you know, Lucifer, some form of archangels, some form of, it just depends on what culture you're talking about.
Another common theme or common story you see is, you see the flood. You also see, quite frankly, the virgin birth. It's definitely mm-hmm. unique to Christianity, and there are many that predate Christianity. So, yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually listening to a podcast of talking about the Bloody Mary mythology, the old urban legend stuff, and talking about how it all goes into like paranoia and fear about menstrual cycles and, you know, menstrual blood and how icky and disgusting it has been considered throughout history, and the fear and paranoia that was surrounding it. And this was actually tied into that. And it was a really interesting like history of where even like that kind of somewhat silly urban legend comes from.
Most of your demonic messengers came in the form of Mormon missionaries in this book. And
I'm
curious as to if this was some sort of a commentary on Mormonism, or just Mormon missionaries as a whole, or if it was just,
they're
that'd
easy.
Be funny.
Well, yeah, well, I'll admit, I mean, I don't have anything against Mormon missionaries necessarily. I just grew up with a lot of them. And I think growing up in Colorado, it was more of a familiarity thing because, yeah, no, they were come to your house and knock on your door every day if you let them. And hello, hi, I'm Elder Smith. Would you like to talk about? No. Okay. all right, have a great day. You know, and they're like the cheeriest, happiest people you've ever seen in your life. And they were just kind of easy. And I think it was more of like a familiar, it was more of like an easy target thing. And I am sorry, Mormon missionaries out there, but quite frankly, they're probably not my target audience, really. I mean, I'm going to make a weird guess. But it would be,
if you think about it though, they're perfect.
Right.
Because they are by design, generally very not naive. That's not the right
open-minded.
Word. But they open-minded, kind of, they kind of feel very innocent and susceptible. Yeah. So, I mean, for me, it made complete and total sense, but I also chuckled every time it happened.
Well, yeah. And I think, though, if I was looking to overtake someone's mind, I mean, here's somebody who is just so willing to hear everything you have to say, right? So I think they're just probably a little bit more open to, you know, say demonic possession every once in a while, which is not a nice thing. And I do apologize. I didn't necessarily mean it as a total slam against Mormons. And I've gotten a few comments back from people who have, I don't know how anybody gets this book early. It's kind of funny because I like comments will pop up on Goodreads and I'm like, huh, I'll be dang. They got that book. All right.
Ark in the Wild.
I know, right? Ark in the Wild. Look at that.
Ark in the Wild.
Because it does have the potential to offend people. And that wasn't really my intention. I've known plenty of perfectly nice, normal Mormons that I'm sure would never be possessed by a demon. Right?
I consider it a symbol of their purity that they are so susceptible.
Right. But I do think that anybody who does missionary work in that sense is probably very susceptible, because really what you're doing is going into strange environments you're not familiar with prior to, and your whole job is to listen to people and then try to take their beliefs and sort of work it into, you know, okay, well, how do you feel about this? You know? So I feel like any kind of missionary, like whether you're anybody that goes door to door, right, probably is a little more susceptible to this only by the very nature of the fact that they've been trained to listen and to be open to what they're going to receive when that door opens. I spent a really miserable summer when I was about, I don't know, 18 or 19, working for Koperg out in Colorado. And we went door to door getting petition signatures for some, I don't know, environmental law that they were passing at the time. And it was like the worst job ever, really. But they did all this training about how you're supposed to be so open when people open the door to you, and how you're supposed to really kind of try to evaluate and get the feed off of them. Like, are they open to hearing what I have to say? And are these people going to listen to me? And I should listen to them? And what are they hearing? And so I can imagine that missionaries are trained in very much the same way as door-to-door petition takers are.
Yeah, that gives me social anxiety just thinking about it.
Oh, it was the worst job ever. It was.
Nope, I wouldn't like that.
Easily the worst one, yeah.
Thinking of characters and being open and being on, maybe not being, maybe brainwashed, maybe not, but definitely being programmed in a way to be a certain way, or to act a certain way, or to do a certain job. And then, and not having as much agency, or actively not claiming your agency, there's a character who passes.
Yes. Yes.
And there's lots of characters that pass. I'm just going to put that out there.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bloodbath.
No one's safe.
Exactly. There's a character who passes. Now, back up a step or 35. Kate, we learn early on that she's got something going on. She's a very special little girl, or very special creation. And until she comes into her own, like, not just like legally as a human, right? She can kind of age out of the system, or she can be rescued from a certain system, / until her powers of whatever she is or however she is come to a certain level. She is part of, as you said, part of this group home system. And even though she has abilities, she has to kind of bide her time. And yeah, her abilities, and you've already hinted at this or said it, her abilities are linked to basically God of the Dead, right? Or Goddess of the Dead,
right?
To come anyway, to embody at some point. So it's funny, not funny, haha, but
sad, funny, poignant, interesting that this character whose future that is cannot makes a statement like this. Kate says, "To this person who's passing, I owe you a debt," the girl whispered. "I cannot save you. I command the dead, but cannot stop one from crossing into my realm. Not yet." So with that, and if you can't answer it, okay, fair enough. But you've mentioned that there's a sequel. Will Kate's powers grow to include that?
Her powers grow to include a great many things.
<the answer. laughs>
So here's the question. And this was, well, maybe it's not the question because that implies that I have the best question and I don't think that I do. But here's my question. Is there a point at which she's not omnipotent, correct?
No.
Okay. Because omnipotent characters are very difficult to read because you reach a point where you're like, well, why are we even reading this anymore? They're just going to snap their fingers and everything ends. So, So I was just wanted to make sure to clarify that she is not omnipotent. Mm-hmm. So it's worth reading, people, because I'm telling you, I gave up on Laurel K. Hamilton after a very long time. I read her way longer than I thought I would because her character of Anita Blake just kept getting more and more powers. And I'm like, at what point does she just do all the things? Why am I reading this anymore? So, seriously. So I always applaud a nice, flawed, powerful being.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think omnipotent characters are, you know, it's too easy for one thing. I mean, it's interesting because in theater, they used to say that if your motivation, if your character's motivation is to leave, why don't you just, you know, leave? Right. And it's with an omnipotent character is like, what's stopping you from basically Thanos, you know, eating your way out of everything?
Exactly.
Like just, just do it, you know, just snap your fingers, kill everybody or whatever you're going to do. So I think it's seeing the struggle between what you want to do and what you can't do yet is much more interesting.
No, and that was honestly one of the really enjoyable things to read in this is the growth of the character because she tries all the different angles. She's like, I tried being straight with you. That didn't work well. I tried pretending everything was fine. Well, that didn't do what I needed. So it was kind of like her finding her footing and how to exist within the confines of the society that she's in based upon her age and limitations in that respect. So I enjoyed that aspect of it as well.
Oh, yay.
She's like, I don't know how to respond to that, but thank you.
That's nice.
The
I know, right?
character to whom Kate was speaking in the last quote I read. This question I did ask you privately, and I won't mention the characters' names. Is it possible that that character might visit?
Are all the dead dead, or can they come back in future books?
I don't care about the rest. I just want this character.
She hasn't, but yeah, I'll put it that way. Yeah, you know, I kind of read Wedding to the end of that book.
Just a little bit,
you know. No, but the second book I'm really quite excited about, and that'll be out in a year, but that one is, you know, it's funny because this book feels like it's been around, to me, it feels like it's been around forever because I've been through the editing process. I've been living with it for, I mean, a couple of years now. And when people bring up things in Davla, I'm like, oh yeah, that did happen. You're right. Okay. All right. Because from the author perspective, you've been living with this book for, like a good solid 2 years now at this point, you know? So I'm all like, okay, but the second book, the next book, look at this. You know, the one you haven't read yet because it's in the editor's hands, right?
So is the second book going to pick up right immediately where the first one lets off or is there a time passage or is this?
There's a bit of a time passage and without giving away too much, it's ticking up with what the society, the cult kind of turns into and it's morphing of that society and that culture. And it's also going back in time to tell the story of Onsley and the start of the society in Cork in Ireland in the early 20s. So it has a bit of a hag sort of feel because we go back to trace Onsley's story and how the society became a matriarchal cult and where the roots of it are.
I know. I'm just hearing the tagline. Liked. I can't pronounce it. I just keep saying devil. And you said it's diavol. Is that what it is?
Another crazy Gaelic word.
So it's like, did you like Diavel but wished it was more like hag? Coming next year.
You like a little hag in your devil books? This is for you.
Oh my goodness.
So how appropriately timed is the release of your demonic book? It's being released just in time for Halloween.
Right?
That is.
Isn't that perfect?
And if you said the next one is going to be released in approximately a year, was that also such a timed on purpose?
I think that Turner times all of their spooky books for October, which is really, really nice. Because I tend to see spooky books come out in either the summer or October. And I think the summer works pretty well because you have like your beach reads and, you know, like that's when you're kind of. But I also think October is such a perfect time because, I mean,
it's the best time of year, by the way.
You know, it really is. If it could be Halloween all the time. Yes.
Where can people find Devil?
They can find it at bookstores everywhere, but you probably have to order it. I would go to IndieBound. Amazon is great, but IndieBound, when you order from them, you go through an independent bookstore. So you're supporting the little guy when you do that. And they go to, I think you can pick your independent bookstore or they kind of pick one close to you, but you're supporting the little guy. And Amazon is such a machine now. They don't need any more business. So Amazon's great, and I get tons of stuff from there, but IndieBound is wonderful for books because they really support like the booksellers, the classic booksellers. So yeah, IndieBound, if you have a local bookstore in your town that you like, they will order anything for you. So I would go through them first. And yeah, support the little guy because independent bookstores are really the heart and soul of this industry. And especially genre books like mine we owe our livelihood to them because this is where my people hang out, is at these little indie bookstores, quite frankly. Yeah, IndieBound, IndieBound.com. And you can order anything through there, but my book as well. So
you've already given us a little bit of the update that you have / can share regarding Larry Baylor. Is there any movement that you're able to discuss? Is there any movement on anything for Hag?
Not that I can discuss.
I'm going to take that positively.
Not that I can discuss, but I neither confirm nor deny your question.
I like it.
Very good. And it might be too early days because I know we're talking about the release of Devil, but
has this one been optioned yet?
Oh, Lord have mercy.
The book that hasn't come out yet, has that been optioned?
Well, I can neither confirm nor deny that rumor.
Well, I like your answers. I like these. Really right? Good. No, I like them.
Isn't that nice? No, I like them too because
it's like I get it. I get it either way. I'm fine. Okay, we can't wait to share this.
Awesome. And also, I want to just plug because I didn't get a chance because this is actually before the book launch parties, as opposed to after doing this interview. But if you're in the LA area, we have our first launch party at Book Soup, which is a gorgeous little indie bookstore in West Hollywood, on November 8th at 7 p.m. And it's going to be such a huge amount of fun. And then if you're in Denver on November 23rd, we will be at the Book Bar, which is this absolutely incredible little wine bar / bookstore. And it's gorgeous there. So if you're at Denver on the 23rd or in LA on the 8th of November, then you should come out and join us because it's so incredibly much fun, and we have really good snacks at these things.
Now, do I recall correctly, you were having a donation set up where people could get, was it to get tickets or something? And in return, they would be able to come to one of these openings as well as get a goodie bag? Or is that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, tell us about that.
So you can come to these for free, of course, but I am using this as an opportunity for a fundraiser for Races for legal aid and education to help people struggling with the immigration crisis on the border. And so if you go to my website or www.kathleenkaufman.com, the link is there for my fundraiser. And it's also all over my Facebook page and Twitter and all of that fun stuff. But I'm just using this as an opportunity to raise some funds for this. And if you donate $25 to the cause, and I see it online who's donated. But if you donate $25 and you come to one of the events, you get a really and seriously sweet goodie bag. I'm so happy about the goodie bags. And if you pre-order a book from one of the indie bookstores and come to the event, you also get a goodie bag. And if you say something nice to me at the event, you'll probably get a goodie bag, really. I mean, we have a lot of goodie bags.
I just wish sometimes, a lot of times actually, I'm not going to lie, I wish we were closer to LA because I'd be, although it's probably best we're not because the amount of things that we hear about, I mean, if we were down there, we'd hear about a lot more. But just, I mean, yeah, I'd be going to too many parties.
So you said the Denver one is the Saturday before Thanksgiving. Is that what it is?
It is.
Oh, I might be in Colorado for Thanksgiving.
Yes.
I might. I can't guarantee it. It all depends on a bunch of other things, but the plan was that would be awesome. Let's see what I can do.
Regardless of whether she's there or not, if I can donate, and I want to do it no matter what, if I can donate, is there a way to get, if I kind of help you out with some,
you guys are getting a goodie bag.
Nope. What?
Oh, you're getting a goodie bag. Goodie bag. You get a goodie bag. You get a goodie bag. Everybody gets a goodie bag.
Yeah. No, I do. I like the cause. And obviously, I want to support you in the book. Yeah. I just want to know if I can help pay for the postage for my goodie bag. if summer can't get it.
Oh, yeah. No, she's just going to get two goodie bags if she comes to Denver. So
that was a long one. Okay.
Oh my goodness! Well, yay! Thank you, Kathleen. We will share your, as I said, all the assets information. We'll link out to IndieBound. We'll link out to your Raices. Fundraiser. Thank you. Okay. Fundraiser. We'll link to that. Will include information about how to donate and also about the goodie bag and all of that, right?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
And of course, like I said, we'll give a picture or a high res image of a cover of Devil. So you guys on the 29th, that is today. So go out and order from indiebound.com, order your copy of Devil by author Kathleen Kaufman. And Kathleen, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you so much for having me on. This is awesome.
We are always tickled. We were just like, we get to talk to Kathleen again. We get to talk to Kathleen again. I mean, you don't need to write a book, girl, for to come on. You're welcome to join us.
Well, come on and talk about possums.
Yes, oh my god. And
actually
gnomes.
It's not
I'm sorry. If you don't write a book about the evil possum that's under your bed, Ginger will haunt you.
Oh my gosh.
She's already she hasn't blocked me yet, but she's already she knows my line. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She knows I've teased her. I've joked about it enough. I think she's like, got it, Ginger.
No, you know what's funny is I went to StokerCon this last year up in Grand Rapids, and people were coming, everybody's there and you're wearing a name tag and everything like that. So, but people are coming up and being like, a couple of people, I like your book. But I mean, a ton of people were coming up and saying, oh my God, the possum.
Exactly.
That's too much. Okay. Right? So, the answer, your fans have spoken.
Yeah. I know. It was hilarious, though. It was I think I was more well-known for the possum than I was for any of my books. The fact that a rogue possum had been sleeping under my bed for God knows how long.
Exactly. Honestly, who knows how long?
Who knows?
Oh, my God. That actually is, double, triple bonus points if you do write that book. If you can combine possum gnome storyline, something autumnal.
Oh, I tell you.
Or not even autumnal, spooky, so you can have that book come out in October as well.
Oh my goodness. Okay, I'm sending you the link to the fundraiser now.
Perfect.
And I'm sending. Send. There it is. Coming your way.
Okay.
Perfect.
Great. We're so thankful that you joined us again, and we can't wait to talk about... Oh, are you allowed to give a title yet for the next one or not yet?
I'm sure it will be unpronounceable.
Yeah.
So for now, I'm going to call it Devil 2.
Yeah, exactly. Right now it's in Book 2, but say that in Gaelic if you really want to.
I was going
to
say 2 in Gaelic because it'll be Devil whatever. However you think in Gaelic.
It is as of yet untitled, but we're working on it. So, you know.
Say that in Gaelic.
Right?
As of yet untitled.
As of yet untitled.
Yeah. We'll have to ask our Gaelic-speaking friends.
Yeah.
If it was Welsh, it would have a lot of L's.
Yes, exactly. See, Welsh is much worse than Gaelic, so I could have been worse.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, that's going to be her next book, people.
Thank you for the idea.
Oh, hey, look, if you went from Gaelic to Navajo, I have no idea what you're going to do next.
Oh, so much fun.
So much fun.
So much fun.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us. We will definitely have you back to talk about the yet untitled. Mm-hmm.
Book two. Yeah.
And so best of luck with Devil to you. And thank you, Turner, for assisting us in everything and helping us get the book so we can be somewhat educated to speak with Ms. Coffin about it.
Of course. So, and for our listeners who are currently suffering through some autumnal droughtlander, this is the perfect book that gets you right in the seasonal mood and give you the hint of the language you're wanting, and to just kind of bridge the gap.
Right.
And if you have not picked up or read Hag, by all means, order them both, because then you will have double your pleasure, double your fun, and you still have time to like get them. Well, I guess not, because the 29th, you can get Hag now and get the other one later. So, okay, I'm backing up a little bit. If someone wanted a signed copy, is there a way to order that from you?
Yeah. You know what? Just reach out to me on social media. I'm on Facebook or Twitter or the Instagram, right?
The gram.
You know, on the internet, right?
On the interwebs.
On the interwebs. Just reach out to me, because, yeah, I can make that happen too. So
excellent. Excellent. I'm so excited. I can't wait for this to come out and to help spread the word, share the love for another one of your just delicious books.
Oh, awesome. And thanks so much for having me on. It's always such a blast.
Of course.
It is our pleasure. Okay, well, we can't wait until the next time.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code Outlander20, Outlander20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlander Pod.